Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And today I'm going to be talking about a book which was recommended to me by listeners of the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. It was on goodreads.com. There's a group called SFBRP Listener Group, and and there's a thread called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed, even though I think it should be Here Reviewed, because this is a podcast and you hear me review books. Anyway, so I've gone through there and I've found lots of books to read, and somebody recently, I can't remember who it is because I don't have my computer open in front of me at the moment, they said, hey, what you should do is, if you like Red Dwarf, there are some Red Dwarf books, novels, and written back in the 1980s and 1990s, back when Red Dwarf was first starting out and was becoming more and more popular, there was these books put out, and I thought, oh, I'll check it out. The first one is called Infinity Welcomes Careful Drivers, and it's by Grant Naylor. And Grant Naylor isn't actually one person. It was a writing team, Rob Grant and Doug Naylor, who created Red Dwarf, the TV show, and wrote quite a lot of it, and even directed some of it, I think. So those were the two, but they decided to, put their names together, become a kind of not just a duo, but like a fake one person. So at the end of Red Dwarf, it would be like created by Grant Naylor or written by Grant Naylor, characters based on those created by Grant Naylor, actually Rob Grant, Doug Naylor. And there was quite a few seasons after a few seasons of Red Dwarf. In fact, I think Red Dwarf is still being made. There was like a 10-year gap, and then they kind of did some like a mini series on another channel. And I think even now there's still new Red Dwarf being made even this year. I'm not entirely sure about that one. So yeah, very long running TV show going all the way back from the 1980s all the way up now. So for those who don't know what Red Dwarf is, the setup is very simple. The start of it is that there's a mining ship that's traveling in space. It was traveling in the solar system. And there was a radiation leak that killed everyone on board except for one guy called Dave Lister, who had been put into stasis as a punishment for a crime. He brought a cat on board the ship, and that was that should have been quarantined, and it wasn't quarantined, and it would be too dangerous. So he gets put into stasis, and when everyone else is killed off by the radiation leak, he survives in stasis, and so does his cat, who was hidden away in the cargo hold at the time. And then the Red Dwarf, I think that leak happened either in the solar system. It's a bit different because I just read this book, and the book, there's quite a few things that change in the book compared to the actual original TV series. But then, because of the radiation leak, the Red Dwarf mining ship just gets out of here, and it goes. And then millions of years later, 2 million or 3 million years later, depending on the continuity, the radiation level has come down, and Dave Lister comes out of stasis, and everybody's dead, Dave. Dave, everybody's dead. And everyone's dead. And they have been, except the cat. And the cat is a long descendant of the of Dave Lister's original cat. The descendants have... Oh, it was a pregnant cat as well. So they bred down in the cargo hold, and a whole cat civilization grew up, and they've evolved into kind of humanoid cat people. But there's only one of them left as well, and the cat's name is Cat. And that survives. And there are a few other characters, of course. There is Arnold J. Rimmer, who is a hologram. The Red Dwarf computer can only have enough programming power to run one artificial, well, not artificial personality, but to run one recorded personality. And Holly, the computer of Red Dwarf, decides, what we'll do is we'll revive as a hologram Dave Lister's the person who was closest to him before he was put in stasis, and that was his commanding officer, officer third class or whatever it was, or technician first class or whatever Arnold J. Rimmer was, who was just sort of like one rung above him. These were two of the lowliest technicians on the ship. And technician doesn't mean sort of a technical person, it means sort of like cleaning person, a cleaner, and someone who makes sure vending machines are fully stocked. There were technicians third class and technicians first class. And yeah, so Arnold J. Rimmer is brought back and made into a hologram, and he survives as well. And later on, there are other characters as well. Crichton, who is a service mechanoid, a service android who is discovered on another crashed ship and joins the cast as well. And of course, Holly the computer. So it's the whole TV show, or the first, just, I mean, this book is based on the first few seasons of the TV show. So in that is mostly Lister, Dave Lister, Arnold J. Rimmer, the cat, and Holly the computer having adventures while they try to get back to Earth because they're, you know, thousands of light years or however many light years away from Earth, and they want to get back to Earth. And the last human, the last cat humanoid, a hologram and a computer, and later on a service android. So that's the TV show. It's a sitcom. And it's a science fiction sitcom. And so what they do is every week there'll be it'll be the same characters getting into a different situation, which is of course what a sitcom is. But all the situations are generally based around science fiction ideas, science fiction themes, science fiction tropes. So there's lots of time travel. There's lots of parallel universes. There's lots of crashing into moons. There's asteroid mining. There's just adventures around the ship. There's finding aliens. Pretty much anything that's ever existed in science fiction. It's just open season, and as the TV series went on, things got more and more silly in some cases, and then the characters became more important and stuff. But there was a big stretch where Red Dwarf was a massive hit in the UK. Like when I was at school, everyone was talking about Red Dwarf. I didn't get into Red Dwarf straight away. I saw a few episodes, and of course, you don't really need to see many episodes. You just go, oh, okay, this is the thing. As soon as you understand the characters, you see them and you go, right, now I understand it. But then later on, mid-90s or something, I got more into it. And then a bit later, I did some binge-watching of DVDs and downloads and stuff like that. I think I still have the first two seasons on DVD at home. So those are the first... Actually, it was weird because I think it really hit its stride. The first two seasons are okay, but it's after the real cast gets together, the main five characters of the cat, Crichton, Rimmer, Lister, and Holly. Once those get together, there are some really fantastic episodes. And then later on, I think Rimmer left the cast, and Kachansky, who is Lister's girlfriend, one-time girlfriend or something, or the person he had a crush on. Again, the setup is often like fluid. At some point, the Red Dwarf ship itself is destroyed, and then Rimmer becomes Ace Rimmer and a different kind of character and all these different things. So as it went on, it gets a bit more confusing. I must admit, I haven't kept up with the latest ones. I saw part of the miniseries from a few years ago, but I haven't kept up with the latest episodes. And there's lots of them in like season 9 and 10, or 8 and 9, which I didn't keep up with. But I have seen quite a bit of this TV show. It is very good, very consistently interesting. And what I really liked about the TV show is, as I mentioned before, all of these science fiction premises. It's a lot of it, you can really tell. These writers, Grant Naylor, Rob Grant and Doug Naylor, and all the other writers on this TV show, you can really tell that they're science fiction fans. The science fictional elements aren't just throwaway ideas. They really commit to in each one of them, they really commit to it. It's like, okay, this is the rules for this episode. We have this thing going on and we need to get to the end of it. Within each episode, of course, the rules of the world and the rules of the continuity and all that kind of thing change from episode to episode and from season to season. And there's lots of retconning where they go, oh, well, this character used to be like this, or this character died here, or this thing, like, well, we'll just bring them back. Oh, we can rebuild this stuff. But like I say, within each episode, the science fiction is actually quite rigorous in a way which is quite surprising. In some ways, where it could have just been silly, a lot of the stuff is silly, but the characters are silly, but the characters are put into kind of serious science fiction situations, which is really good fun. So this book that I'm going to be reviewing here, Infinity Welcomes Careful Drivers, published in 1989, written by Grant Naylor, Rob Grant and Doug Naylor. And so I'll just go through some of because that's kind of the setup, so I'll just go through some of this stuff. So it starts off with the theme tune, very catchy theme tune of Red Dwarf, but it was a MIDI version of the theme tune, and I was like, oh, maybe they didn't have the rights for the full version, but MIDI theme tune, let's go for it. And then it starts off, and it actually goes back, so it's doing a bit of backstory before the first TV show, before the pilot or whatever the episode, season one, episode one, is, what's happening on Red Dwarf. before, you know, as it all kicks off, all the crew die. Dave Lister gets put into status. He comes out. Rim is a hologram. You know, that whole first bit. But this actually goes back before then. It talks a little bit about, you know, how the holograms work. You know, somebody dies and goes, oh, well, the person on Red Dwarf has died and he's been made into a hologram. But then somebody else who is a higher officer dies. And because there can only be one hologram at a time, he gets replaced. And then we have the first meeting between Rimmer and Lister before Dave Lister has signed up onto Red Dwarf on the mining ship. And then a bit more of them. So there's quite a bit more backstory for the two of them of what they're doing. And also, I can't remember if this is in the TV show or not. There's a reason why Lister brings the cat on board. Is slightly different. It's kind of like slightly more knowing. And this is the great thing with a book. You see all this stuff happening on a TV show and there can be a conversation. And there's quite a few conversations, which I do remember almost word for word from, just recreated here in the book. So sometimes it feels a bit like a novelization, but it's way better than just like this person said that person said that, because it always gets really deep into the minds and it's like, oh, they're saying this because of this, oh, and there's a little bit of history here and they're talking about this and this is a reference to here, and there's lots more of the science fictional stuff explained, which you just can't do in a TV show, going into the characters' minds. Even though some of my favorite episodes of Red Dwarf are when there's just two characters just having a conversation, Lister and Rimmer. I think there's one called Marooned, which is one of my favorites, and they go down and it's just the two of them in the Starbug or whatever the little ship's called, and they're just marooned there waiting to get picked up, and they're just having a conversation backwards and forwards. I did this, this is what I did, this is how I lost my virginity, this is, you know, those little conversations between them are really great. So it's those conversations plus all the other stuff and like lots of other things that are going on in their mind and lots of other backstory that's being filled in as we go through. So that's the start. We get a little bit more backstory than we get from episode one, season one. And then I made a note here, just scripts from the first season. I thought it was that, but actually it's not really. It's like they go through and take some of the better storylines from not just the first season, but the first two seasons, because Crichton turns up, and Crichton was only a character who turns up in the, season two, Crichton being the droid, the service android. So he turns up, but then actually they kind of layer different storylines over the top of each other. So where Rimmer, where they find the ship and they actually have like another ship that can make another hologram, there is two Rimmers going around. Rimmer recreates himself, so it's Rimmer versus Rimmer or Rimmer Squared. I can't remember the names of the episode. So that's going on, which is I think the last episode of season one. But at the same time, Crichton is there and turns up. So they actually kind of layer on top of each other different episode storyline. In the book it starts off, it feels a little bit episodic at the beginning of the book, you know, when it's doing the backstory stuff and like one or two like TV bits and pieces, but then it becomes very much like there's not just one main storyline, there are kind of like three or four storylines going at the same time, and some of them become subplots and some of them become main plots, and then it finishes off with like an exploration of another episode, the Better Than Life episode, which will be a bit spoilery to go into too much, but again, if you know Red Dwarf, you'll understand what the Better Than Life episode is, and that's kind of where it finishes off, and quite a nice cliffhanger. Of course, I know what happens after this because I've watched the TV show, but there's a fun cliffhanger that happens at the end there. So that's kind of the structure of it. There's lots of stuff, like I say, which is expanded on, not just in characters of like, oh, this character did this before this, and this character works here. I mean, there's this great section where Rimmer is doing his exams, and there's quite an extended section about how he studies to do his officer exam. And he's talking about, oh, and he did this, and then he made a program of, like, he made a guide of how he was going to study, and he had 3 months to study, and he spent the first 2 months just laying out his revision plans and his research plans, and this day he was going to do this, and then it keeps going on and on and on, and how he has to cram more and more and more you know, revision and, you know, going over his notes into a smaller and smaller amount of time. And I think that's mentioned in the book, but it's expanded out. And it is really, really, really funny, these situations I get into. Another thing that I like about it is not just the characters and their backstories that are expanded in this book from the TV show. A lot of the science fictional elements are as well. So instead of it just being like, as it is in the first episode of the first season, it's like, and here is the cat. Yes, the cat is descended from this. It goes into, okay, now here's the history of the cat civilization that grew up in the cargo hold of Red Dwarf. And it gets into a lot more, it kind of explains it away, because you just go, well, why is the cat like that? Or why is there only one cat left? Why is it doing this? Why is it living like this? And a lot of those questions that you'd maybe have from the TV show, which are answered, you know, over long time, is kind of compressed down into a little bit of an info dump, but a quite interesting info dump. And quite a fun science fiction-y. I mean, that kind of science fiction thing of like the birth and growth of a cat civilization, that if a cat civilization is living in an artificial world where everything is created for human beings, like human-shaped things, and all of the supplies are human-shaped things, and all of the entertainment and books and TV shows and everything that's there is all human entertainment, and everything is based on human, the entire environment is based on humans, would it be likely that the cats would evolve to, in the end, look like humans? Maybe, I'm not entirely sure, and speak like humans and be able to speak human language, because all everything around them is human language and human. And you think, well, okay, 2 million years, that could happen. that could be quite fun. And then the character of the cat itself is very cat-like. Of course, in the TV show, Cat is a fantastic character, but in the book, it's kind of explained a little bit more. His character starts off a bit more strongly because we understand where his civilization, where he comes from, is there. Yeah, and quite a few of the like actual science fictional things as well is explained a bit better in the book, because, to be honest, science fiction, I do think, is like much better as a... I don't think science fiction movies are the best place where science fiction can happen. Movies are too short often to explore interesting ideas and theories and concepts and world building in just one movie. And I think that's why the most popular science fiction movies are either masterworks or series. You know, something like Star Wars is a series, and that's, you kind of need that to build out the world. There's you know, in Star Trek, I guess Star Trek's a TV series, so TV is probably a better place for big ideas, and that's where, you know, Star Trek and, of course, Red Dwarf come in, and, you know, the other things like Battlestar Galactica, which I never really got into, and Star Trek, which I never really got into at all. Of any science fictional TV, I think Red Dwarf is the one that I stuck with the most. And what else have we got here? Oh yeah, so books. That's what I'm saying. Books are the novels are the place where I think science fiction shines, because it's the perfect amount to really get into the characters and things in a way, like, it's not as long running or as, you know, kind of formulaic as a TV show, but there's a lot more than a book, and you can just get more out of a there's more than a movie, but so you can just get a lot more out of a book or put a lot more into a book. And here's the thing. I'm talking about like the characters and the concepts, but what really works with the book is that the budget for the Red Dwarf TV show is a TV budget. It's not a movie budget. So if you say, we want 5,000 extras in this scene, in a movie, you could probably do that. Or even if you're just using CGI, you can have massive crowds, you can have big destruction, you can have massive spaceships, you can have, you know, wide ranging shots, you can have all that kind of stuff. In a TV show, you can't really have that. You need to have a small set. Like the Red Dwarf set is just sort of like, they go, oh, okay, well, here is a room, a common room, a bedroom, you know, some control room. And then all of the other sets were just like, okay, we need something that looks kind of industrial to be the inside of a spaceship. So let's go across here, you know. And a lot of them were filmed with, you know, with live audiences. So the sets are quite, you know, the sets can be quite small, or they're just running around corridors. I mean, this is the same with all science fiction. There's some fantastic footage of the Aliens movie and the processing plant, the atmosphere processing plant, was an old power station in the UK. And you actually look at it, when you look at it, you go, oh, that's just an old power station with the in the UK. But when they light it properly and it's all dark and, you know, you can go, okay, all these pipes and ladders and all that kind of stuff looks very science fictional. If you just go into, you know, into like an oil refinery or something, it just looks very science fictional. That's what they do with, you know, with kind of Red Dwarf. But in the book, you can just go, like, in the Better Than Life episode, they, you know, they go, oh, Rimmer is now the richest man in the world, and they do this. They just go into a stately home nearby where the studio was, and just shoot a piece in sort of like a nice mansion, and they put in a big statue, you know, a big fake statue, which is just a special effect. But really, there's still only like 5 people on the screen at any one time, and the weather's not great because it's Britain, but they can't afford to wait for good weather or do, you know, special effects to make it look fantastic. Whereas in the book, you can go, oh, Rimmer is now the richest man in the world, and he can live on a mountain, or he can live in the center of Paris on the Champs-Élysées, and he can have skyscrapers, and everyone can be there, and they can have massive parties with thousands of people, and the richest people in the world can be there, and the most influential people in the world can be there, and he can have the most beautiful wife, and, you know, all of these different things. In a book, you can just put it in there, and you can go, and they can go and look at the cat's mansion on the hill, and all these things, which are pretty much impossible to do as a TV show. And that really makes me think, where you just understand why these people, like these directors, do the director's cut. They go, well, at the time, we didn't have the budget or the special effects to be able to put my vision in place. And you understand that the vision of Grant Naylor, Doug Naylor, and Rob Grant is really broad. They understand what makes fantastic visuals, or they understand what makes a great story and great characters and things. But of course they couldn't put it on screen, but it's in the book. Like, if they were to go, let's make the book, or let's make the TV show as it would be perfectly in our minds, in our original creation of what these characters go through, and the special effects that we would need, and the staging, and the cast members of thousands and things, and all this different kind of, all that kind of stuff, you would imagine, okay, you would need a movie budget or a novel, which is, I guess, is the other way. I guess the same, similar kind of thing happened with the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You can kind of see the TV budget versions, and although I've only ever seen part, like bits of the episodes, I've never actually watched the TV episodes. But what you realize is in the book, it can be a massive scale thing, and in the radio play, it can be a massive scale thing. In the movie, it can be a massive scale thing because they had the budget to put together all the special effects and good costumes and all that kind of stuff. Whereas in the TV show, you go, okay, well, that's kind of lacking. It looks a bit cheesy. Maybe fun. Again, I didn't watch enough of the TV show of that to understand, like to get a handle of if it's good or not. But yeah, the book is good. The movie, not fantastic, but again, you can understand the scale of it. You can really see, okay, when you see all the dolphins fly up into space, you actually see them do it. You know, all the extracts from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the book, and all the aliens look great and stuff like that. Even if you don't like the whole movie in its own right, you can really see, you really need a movie budget to get that kind of stuff on screen rather than a TV budget. So that's a lot of fun that you get from the book as well. Also, the book is just really funny. It was pretty interesting to just read Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, which is, again, about like the last people on Earth and being stranded and trying to get back to Earth. And that was all spaceship design and all that kind of stuff. But it was pretty grim, you know, some really grim stuff. I mean, in some parts it was fun, but really grim. And then you just, I stopped doing that. I recorded the podcast with Juliana, and then I started this book, and straight away I was laughing out loud because it's just really, really funny. It's similar sense of humor. You can really see that this kind of British science fiction sense of humor, just mentioning, of course, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, that's there, you know, very much so there as well. But also you realize that the culture universe is kind of, it definitely comes in that same British comedy tradition, comedy writing tradition. I remember once, I can't remember what podcast it was, but someone had listened to the BBC adaptation of one of the Culture Stories, State of the Art, and they were like, oh yes, it's very much like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I was like, no, the culture's nothing like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But then I thought, actually, when it's made into an audio play, It is much more like that, you know, the silly characters, the funny spaceships, the you know, the characters who are trying to pass as humans and not as humans and going down to Earth. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, I totally understand. There is that through line of British science fiction comedy stuff, which is definitely there, right there in Red Dwarf, and it comes out a lot in this book, just the way, you know, it's always sending up, you know, national stereotypes. And, you know, regional stereotypes as well. Lots of stuff about, oh, this person's from, you know, Scunthorpe or wherever it is from, you know, sort of like making fun of the provincials. Not so much national stereotypes or, you know, racial stereotypes, much more like British stereotypes. And you can really get that as well with the audiobook performances by Peter Kenny with the Culture Books and here as well. I'm going to talk a lot more about that in a minute. So yeah, and always sending up bureaucracy, you know, in a lot of these things, it's the bureaucracy, which is the funny, you know, it's always a satire on British bureaucracy and queuing and doing all this kind of stuff and what you need to get through it. That's right there in Hitchhiker's Guide and in this novel as well. What I want to say at this point is, if all of this sounds a bit weird and you go, oh, maybe this is only for people who are fans of the TV show, I'm not sure. I think this book would stand alone. It stands alone. There is enough science fictional ideas and the characters are good enough. And I do think, and I actually saw someone mention on Goodreads when I put on one of my Goodreads like reading updates, someone said, oh, I really love this book. And I didn't even know it was a TV show. I just really enjoyed the books back in the day when I read them in Canada or US or wherever it was from before it got into the books and stuff. So I do understand that it might be a bit tricky. And of course, if you come into it like I do with a lot of nostalgia for Red Dwarf, those middle seasons, again, I've not kept up with it now. But there are, you know, it's, I do have a, I was a big fan when I was younger, or an enthusiast. I watched as much of it as possible. It's really good fun, and I'll still stick on some episodes even to this day. The book, I think, I enjoyed it a lot more, I think, because of that, but I think it still does hold up. And the reason why it holds up is because of these characters. The great thing about this book, this is where I go into transition into the Audible plug. So you can actually get this book for free if you check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP by using that offer code, audibletrial.com/SFBRP. You can get a free book if you sign up for an Audible account. It's a trial account, so you don't have to pay for it. You only have to pay for it if you continue the account. That's what I do. I get two audiobooks a month. There's another plan which you get one audiobook a month. Depends how much you listen. I listen quite a lot. And yeah, it costs sort of like, I don't know, I pay $15 or euros or something a month and get two audiobooks. It's a fantastic deal. And I would suggest something like this. You know, I often suggest, oh, Peter Kenny has got a really great narration, lots of great voices, really good performances when he does the Culture Books. This is actually narrated by Chris Barry. Now, I haven't actually mentioned the actors here, but Chris Barry plays Arnold J. Rimmer. So it's, of course, you're thinking, okay, Rimmer is probably the biggest character, or the most memorable character from Red Dwarf, certainly from the early seasons, because it is so much about him and his struggles. The other characters are kind of come in well-formed, but he's the one who goes on the biggest like journey as a character. The other characters do things and things happen to them, but Rimmer is the big character. So he's doing his voice. But also, it really helps that this person, Chris Barry, is someone who has lived with Red Dwarf. So when it gets to the point he has to do the voice of Craig Charles playing Dave Lister, it is uncanny how close. I mean, he's an actor. You know, Chris Barry is an actor. He does, this is what he does. He's a professional actor. He takes on other people's personalities. But it is crazy how good his impression of Craig Charles doing Dave Lister is. It is really, really good. And then also, then he does Danny John Jules, who plays the cat, and it's all like, wah! I'm the cat! Wah! Look at me! Wah! And of course, my impression is absolutely terrible there. But again, Chris Barry does a fantastic cat impression. And Norman Lovett, who plays Holly, it's just Holly. It's like, I'm just listening to it. I'm like, did they get in the other actors? Are these the other actors playing the part? No, it really is Chris Barry. And of course, Robert Llewellyn as Crichton. He does a very good Crichton impression too, even though Crichton is only in this book for a little bit. because he was only in the first two seasons a little bit, so he's only a minor character here as well. Absolutely fantastic. This is probably, and I know it's a bit strange to say this because it is one of the actors, but like often when they get the actors to do the audiobook narration, you're like, okay, it's good. They're very good at it, but sometimes I'd like an audiobook specialist. But because this is a TV show and they got one of the cast members, it is uncannily fantastic how well he narrates this book. Even when it's not from Rimmer's point of view, it just works really, really well. It's just fantastic. Probably one of the best audiobooks I've ever listened to. Again, only because I think this mostly because I know the TV series and I know these characters so well, that I think if the accents have been off even slightly, or the performances would be off even slightly, or the tone of voices, or how they would say specific words or anything, but the accents are perfect, the performances are just perfect, it is absolutely amazing. And you can get this book for free, audibletrial.com/SFBIP. You help out me and the podcast and paying for my own reading and bandwidth and internet stuff. It'll be really handy. That's fantastic. Thank you very much for checking out Audible. Anyway, let's get back to this. As I said, the audible, the narration is fantastic. It's not a very long book. Let me just quickly check here. It is like 8 hours and 15 minutes long, which is perfect amount of time for a funny book. But yeah, this brings me to the characters. I mean, I've talked a bit about the characters, but these characters, I think, they become archetypes. They're not stereotypes, but they become archetypal. I do think that, you know, Crichton, like, I think there's a reason why Crichton, the android, like the other actors have gone on to do other stuff, but Robert Llewellyn is still, you know, he went on to do the Junkyard Wars or the Scrap Heap Challenge, and then he does this Fully Charged show talking about cars. You know, he stuck around as that character, even though you never really saw his face properly. We all see when we're looking at Robert Llewellyn, we're going, okay, that's Robert Llewellyn, but really it's kind of, okay, that's Crichton. He's talking about electric cars now or making things in the Junkyard Wars, but you're like, okay, that's, you can really see how these performances, that performance launched Robert Llewellyn as an internationally known comedian and now television presenter. At the time, I think I remember listening about it. He'd just done like an Edinburgh show about being a robot or something, and then they were like, "Hey, we need this robot character," and someone said, "Oh, I know this guy who does a good robot," and that's kind of how he got the gig. I guess he started to audition for it. He wasn't the original. I think there was another actor who played Crichton in his first appearance, but then when he became a main character. Yeah, Robert Llewellyn's back again with that one. The cat is a fantastic character. I really like it because so many people who play or so many characters, it's like, oh, and this character was a cat, but now they're a human cat. It's like, okay, they're not really a cat. They might look a bit cat-like, you know, have pointy teeth or pointy ears or something like that. But I do think Cat from Red Dwarf is the best anthropomorphic cat ever because of his... He is just totally self-obsessed. He looks at himself. He sleeps a lot. He eats a lot. Like, he eats and sleeps and looks at himself in the mirror and dresses fantastically and is just, amazing at so many things, but totally self-centered. He doesn't even have an idea that, like, he doesn't have the theory of mind that other people actually exist. He's just totally cat-like. And then when you look at cats, you're like, yeah, cats would be like that. Cats don't have a morality. Cats don't have anything. Cats are just themselves into themselves, and why wouldn't they be in charge of the entire world? And Cat really brings it out. Norman Lovett playing Holly is really great as well. Not much to say there, but a really good computer AI. Great in the book. Also, not a big part of this. Great in the TV show. Not a big part of this book. Craig Charles playing Dave Rimmer. Dave Lister, so I always get this mixed up, Dave Lister as the last person left alive is a great character because you'd think, okay, who's the last person left alive? Oh, it's a guy from Liverpool and he's a slob and he likes curry. Or is he from Birmingham? No, I think Liverpool. Somewhere around that area. Just a really great, like, who would the last man on earth be? Like, what would be the last representative of the human race? Okay, that guy. And he's also, like, even though he's a slob, I really like it that he can be a slob and he's a bit dumb and he's never read a book, but, like, when stuff needs doing, he can put his mind to it. He's always the first one to work out the riddle. It's like, hey, wait a second, guys, here, where are we? Ah, this is like that, you know, he's got his head screwed on. It's sort of like, he didn't have a privileged upbringing, but he has a good head on his shoulders, even though he's a complete slob. And so yeah, his kind of like wanting to get back home and just being generally a really decent guy. And being a really decent guy, even if you're a slob, you can be like, oh, he's disgusting. But actually, you'd be like, no, actually, if I had to spend time with someone, I'd want to spend time with him. So it's a really good thing, which you played off perfectly by Arnold J. Rimmer. And it was I've always really loved Rimmer as a character, but it was reading this, well, listening to this audiobook, very much listening to it because it's actually read by Chris Barry, who plays Rimmer. I realized that Rimmer is this fantastic, it's like archetypal character, and I think it will be one of those things that when they come to remake this into a movie or another TV show or there's other stuff, Rimmer will be the character, which will be again. It's kind of almost Shakespearean. I reckon in the future it's like, oh, from Star Trek, it's Kirk, and this character played Kirk and Spock, and it's that kind of level of character that Rimmer will be in the future. I think, from the 20th century, 21st century, when people are going like, in 100 years' time or in 200 years' time, when the actors are being recast in this role, it's like, oh, who is gonna play Rimmer? We need someone who can pull off Rimmer in this, in this way. Like, James Bond is a character, but James Bond is in the situations, but I think Rimmer is just got such is just a fantastic character. And especially when there's two Rimmers and Rimmer is talking to himself, that interplay backwards and forwards, and the realizations that Rimmer has about himself, as he's talking to himself and fighting against himself, is just absolutely fantastic. And yeah, it's just so amazing to have this whole audiobook pretty much telling the story of early Rimmer in 8 hours, putting it together. If you think about each episode was 30 minutes, or the TV episode was 30 minutes, and there's like what, 8 episodes in a series or a season. So we're in this book, we're getting more Rimmer than we did in the whole first season and a half of Red Dwarf, in a way which is, it is really satisfying, of this guy who is just awful. He is just a despicable human being, but you have so much pity for him on some levels and so much disgust for him on other levels, and it's just such a fascinating character study, of Arnold J. Rimmer. And anyone who's seen the TV show will understand that certainly the early TV shows, he does mellow out. I think all of the characters mellow out as the episodes go by, but in those first few seasons, Rimmer is a great character. And I was just thinking about this, who would you recast? Of course, Red Dwarf is still going on, and there is still, it is still Chris Barry who is playing Rimmer at the moment. But I'm thinking what we could really do is a remake, a recasting of this, and have different people playing it. And I think everybody would go for lots of people would be going for the Rimmer character. Everyone would want to be Rimmer, and I think it would be fantastic actually to do like they've done with the Ghostbusters, where they're just doing a female only cast remake of Ghostbusters. And I think this would work really well. Maybe not a female only cast of Red Dwarf, but I think it would be really interesting to see Dave Lister and Arnold J. Rimmer being recast as female characters and having that same thing going on with that. May work, may not work at all, but I think that would be really interesting to see those two kind of characters. You can kind of see it in a way in the movie, what was it called? The Heat, with Melissa McCartney and who else? Sandra Bullock. So there was this one stuck-up officer kind of person and one complete slob from the middle of I was going to say Baltimore, Boston, or wherever it goes. A Southie or something, isn't it? So it's a Southie and a stuck-up New York FBI officer team up to crack the case. And I'm kind of seeing the similar thing here as well. You need kind of like to someone who is like really good-hearted but a complete slob to play. I was going to say to play Craig Charles, but to play Dave Lister, and then someone who is totally stuck up, but really has a really fragile character and who's always on the edge of losing it and totally incompetent, but thinks that they're the most competent person to play someone like Rimmer. I think that could work well, or, maybe not, but it would be really good fun. And then, yeah, and have someone like, again, the cat and Crichton, put them in there from season one into this remake TV show. they could still be male characters or whatever, but I think it would be really fun to see, you know, that dynamic playing out in a way which isn't just a fully male cast, that there are actually some more females in the cast there from the start. So, what else do I have to say about this? Characters good, story good. Yeah, and also, normally I talk about the themes of the book, but again, the themes are these characters in different science fictional situations, and I think I'm going to read on. There is a second book, which again was written by Grant Naylor, the both of them, and I was just looking on the Wikipedia page the other day, and so that continues on more storylines from the first two seasons, and it's kind of like the first, and then actually the publisher said, hey, you owe us another two books, but the authors were kind of doing other projects and they didn't have time to get together and collaborate on another book, so they each took they each wrote individually a follow-up to the second book in this series, which were not in the same, they were kind of like diverging storylines. One of them was called, was based on one of the episodes, I can't remember what the episodes, so the other one was based on the Better Than Life episodes, and so they both go in two totally different directions, and they're all on Audible. The next book is narrated by Chris Barry again. I think the one after that is by Craig Charles, and the last one I think is either by Doug Naylor or Rob Grant. I can't remember who it was because I don't have the internet at the moment because I'm sailing on a ship in the North Sea. So I probably will wait a while and I'll spread these out a bit and read them more in the future. But I was really impressed by this book. People said it is actually a fantastic, a really good book. It's not just a fun tie-in novel. It is actually a good science fiction and good characters and good story all by itself. And I do think that is the case. So I'm going to give this pretty high rating, about 4.5 stars. There are some things wrong with it. I didn't really go into that. You know, sometimes I think the plotting is a bit weird, and you know, but again, it is an adaptation. And there are, of course, a few plot holes and a few of the small things wrong with it. But again, a lot of this high rating of 4.5 stars is based on my own nostalgia and my own interest in these characters. But like, there is so much that could have gone wrong with this book. Like, you know, so many things that would have just been like, oh, you know, it's not going to work out. But here it really is. It is a nostalgia pick, but also the audiobook is fantastic. The narration and performance of these different characters is fantastic. Again, based on my knowledge of the TV shows, but it is really good. So thank you, whoever it was. I will say thank you on Goodreads as well, whoever it was on Goodreads who suggested this book, but it was really fantastic. The next book I'm going to review is, let me have a look in Audible, what do I have here? I have Left 4 Dead. Oh, that's not a science fiction book. What do I have here? Oh, Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson. Another recent release. Lots of people say Aurora is very good. I will start that soon and get onto it. Also, Juliana finished the first book in the Otherland series. It's totally dropped out of my head. Otherland by, nope, can't remember. City of Golden Shadow, first in the Otherland. Juliana finally finished that, so when she joins me, she's joining me on a cruise ship next week where I'm working, and she's joining me, which is nice, so we will record that episode. Oh, at the moment I'm on a cruise ship, so if this doesn't sound fantastic, the audio doesn't sound fantastic, I'm just recording it with the microphone on my laptop, so if it's not fantastic, the audio quality is, sorry about that, but doing the best I can. It's either that or wait 3 weeks for me to release the podcast, and I thought I'd just record it now. So, let's finish up here. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every single email that I get, especially if you ask me a question. You can send me recommendations of books that way. The other way to do it is actually go on to Goodreads, either send me a message or write in the SFBRP listener group books I would like to see reviewed. If you just send me one of the Goodreads recommendations, all I get is a book title and an author. I don't get any reasons why I should be reading this, and generally I just ignore those book recommendations. So you have to actually give me at least a few sentences to tell me why I would enjoy this book. So do that way. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge there. Hopefully you enjoyed the last episode I put out on the feed, which wasn't me. It was Juliana and Jenny on the Reading Envy podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed that one. I stuck that in the feed. If you didn't listen to that, you can go back and listen to Juliana and Jenny talking without me, which is quite delightful. And be my friends on Goodreads. That's it for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.